Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers, for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, man, we've been planning this episode for months.
It's since been 2021. It's been 84 years.
Since 2021. And it's basically our letterboxed top four ranked. So here's the gist of it. Posers are assigned the task of watching each other's top four films. Our top fours shifted. Decisions were made. But we have watched all the top fours. So 16 films. And now we are going to rank them. So here are the rules. We are going to go poser by poser, movie by movie, ranking and rating, ranting, reviewing, raving. The gist of the podcast.
Absolutely.
And we're just going to try to have fun with this, see if our tastes really are top tier, which, spoiler alert, they are.
Exactly. We have taste. Those of you who don't agree with us, you are the problem.
But hopefully you get to know us a little bit more. And also, if not, by the end of this, we'll be plugging our Letterboxd because, yes, we work hard on our little silly reviews, on our silly little profiles. So follow us and it'll make this episode much more fun. Any words before we get into the massacre? I mean, the celebration of cinema.
Yo tengo miedo.
No,
I'm scared.
Okay.
I feel some of y'all are not gonna like my picks.
Well,
they're gonna be massacred.
We'll find out. Let's go. Yeah. First up. Oh, by the way, we logged these on Letterboxd, but we don't know each other's ratings of the film, so we don't really know what each person thought of our picks. So you're going to be finding out with us, and we're going to be finding out with you. So first up is Gabriela.
Shit.
So let's start with, well, you know your order best. Let's start with your number four. What is your number four?
My number four film is The Worst Person in the World, directed by Joaquin Trier.
Let the audience know what this film is about.
So this film is about a young woman named Julie who navigates the troubled waters of her love life and struggles to find her career path, leading her to take a realistic look at who she really is.
Why is this on your top four?
I saw this film at New York Film Festival with Josie. It's just, I related a lot to the main character, and that movie was what I needed at that time, and yeah.
Posers, get to ranking. No, not really. What are your thoughts? Juan, let's start with you.
Oh, God.
Hola. So, I'll start with the pros. I thought the acting in here was great. I loved the freeze frame scene, like Anna. It was beautiful. It was so different, so unique, so creative. I really enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed the scene where they take mushrooms. That was fun. That was really well done for me. I think the soundtrack was really great. I'm not going to lie, I'm with Anna on this one. The film was so hyped up to me that I'm expecting, you know, a top tier Parasite level film where I'm gonna just have to give this a 5-star rating because it is just that cinematic. And to be honest, the film lost me a couple of times, but, you know, it did bring me back. It was a lot to process emotion wise. And you know what? It was kind of overwhelming for me. I understood where the main character was coming from. While I personally couldn't relate to the character's situation, I did understand what they were going through, what they were trying to figure out. I think the film is very well done, and I definitely see how this has its audience. Am I part of its audience? I can consider this a great film, but I'm maybe just not the exact audience for this film. I saw it once. I really haven't circled back around to it. Maybe on a rewatch, some things will hit differently for me, but essentially, I think it's a great film. besides those two scenes right now, I can't remember anything else from the film. So I probably will need a rewatch to just further determine if I'm on board or not. But right now, I think I'm not on the hype train.
I would recommend the rewatch because, I mean, just getting ahead so we can save time for later. This is also my number four. Yeah, when I watched it, I had the same effect, but I was actually crying in the theater because the movie ended and the credits were rolling. And then Gabriela looks at me and she's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Why?" And then I realized there were tears running down my face.
Yeah.
But at that time, I wasn't like as in love with it as I came to be. And that was because the second time I watched it to prepare for my interview with Renata Reinsvitt. And self-promo. But I had the opportunity to interview her for Cherry Picks. So I sat down with the film again and tried to internalize it a little bit more. I was in my room. I was in a more solitary state with just my feels and this movie. And I know I went through a different process with it. And you know where it's going the second time. So it's easier for you to notice other things and like dive deeper into the psychology and the philosophy of it all. And also just speaking with her made me appreciate it a lot more, the way that she saw and how in love she sounded with the script, because technically like the film was written for her. How she actually trusted like the writers and the directors. Just the fact that they actually cared about her input and everything, because again, it's a man writing a woman. So I appreciated that too. So I do recommend another go through because that helped me.
Yeah.
Anna.
Mira. So spoiler alert, I'm going with Juan on this one too. Because when the first time I heard this movie, it was praised a lot. So I had big hopes for this film. Everybody was loving it. Y pues entre esta película como que wow, this is gonna be amazing. Maybe it's because I didn't connect with the character and that's why I didn't feel the same as like other people. And I know what she's going through and everything, pero I just feel that it wasn't for me, this movie. There's things that I liked because I really loved the freeze frame scene. I rewinded it actually like 2 times just to see it because I like that. I like that scene and I got it. I like the symbolism behind it, but afterwards, the movie goes on, and again, I didn't connect with the character, and at the same time, she's kind of like unlikable, and I know the movie is about the worst person in the world, but there are times I don't know. I'm sorry, no sé cómo hablar de esta película without like trying not to be rude about it. It was a little bit hard to me to watch.
I'm not on the hype train like Anna, although I will not submit my notes app apology because I'm saving that for a film I might end up seeing soon. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to need it for that more than this. Keep an eye out for one of our episodes, just saying.
Okay, moving on to your number three, Gabriela.
My number three is Pan's Labyrinth, directed by Guillermo del Toro. Which, it's about a 10-year-old girl named Ophelia who feels alone until she explores a decaying labyrinth guarded by a mysterious faun who claims to know her destiny.
Mira, esta película, I wasn't expecting the ending. Yeah, I'm gonna go straight through that. Bro. That shit was depressing. But I liked it.
It's a fucking okay. Masterpiece.
It's a chef's kiss, okay? Me gusta. Y después, like, the makeup in this one with the eyes, like, the cool with the eyes and everything. The actuaciones de la niña. Everything is good about it. I honestly don't have any complaints about this movie.
Excellent. For our audience, this is actually the film that made me want to be a filmmaker. So it's very special to me.
So this was the first time I watched this film. I had never seen the film. I'm familiar with the poster. I'm familiar with like the gif of the one with the hands and the eyes, that character. I was familiar with at least images of this film. But seeing it for the first time, this is another film that I felt a lot of people were like, this is amazing. This is fantastic. But I was a little underwhelmed by this film. Don't get me wrong. I thought from a fantasy perspective, it was really cool and it had some really great ideas that I wished were flushed out more. I loved being in the fantasy world and, you know, seeing this character interact with the monsters. You know, if they would have spent a little more time there and less with the war, I think I would have probably reacted to this film differently. But I really don't even remember that much of the fantasy elements because there was more of the war. And I'm like, that's kind of a shame. I wish it would have focused more on the fantasy, which is what I know Guillermo del Toro for, making these fantastic set pieces that are like dreams come to life. And I do understand at the time, this is a huge achievement. Like Anna said, technically, this is a huge achievement and that should be recognized. I think the violence for me, it threw me off. It definitely took me by surprise. I think it was a little more than I was expecting. I think the thing, there was like something that went into the guy's mouth and that was pretty fucking gross. I'm not gonna lie. The movie itself, I got a little bit bored when it wasn't focused on the fantasy. It was, I don't like films that really focus that much on war. So that could have also been it. But the violence, yeah, I wouldn't say it was like an extreme amount, but it was definitely like, oh, I thought we were here having a casual lunch, you know. Now we're here with the violence. Okay. I could see how this film made a huge impact on you. And I could definitely see how this inspired your love for filmmaking and how you want to explore more worlds like this. For me, visually, it's a very nice film, you know, feast for the eyes at times. It's not necessarily for me, but I can definitely now appreciate it a bit more now having seen it. And I can at least have an opinion on it now because it's the first time I see it.
También como que I feel, adding another comentario. I feel like because of the main character is a child, we see her going through all this like triumphs and like, hardships. It's como que if you feel como more emotional to it because diablo, something's gonna happen to this girl. Y pues como que you get a little bit attached to it. Y después como que at the end, and you're like, damn, it feels more impactful.
Well, I was not a big fan.
I knew it.
Yeah. I knew it. No, Juan, you're not alone. This watching this film. No, yeah. When I finished this film, I was like, oficialmente puedo decir que no me gusta Guillermo del Toro, because I haven't vibed with a single one of his films.
Oh my god!
Bring her your notes of apology. Be ready.
El laberinto del fauno y yo, we did not vibe.
That's okay. You know what? The right film will come to you. You know what it is? Guillermo del Toro is an acquired taste. Sometimes you got to really go like 100% to the world he's creating. But I think the right film you're going to connect with.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, for example, I would give it a 3 out of 5 because, I mean, it's Pan's Labyrinth. But I just remember, because I watched this in December. I don't remember much of my thoughts. I don't remember where I put my notes. All I know is that I do remember finishing the film and going, that's it. I didn't get the hype. It just feels very mundane. we did not vibe. Apologies.
Yo creo que también lo que hace como que this movie great, I think it's also like in the technical side of it all. Como que saca la historia aparte.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a masterpiece.
It received one of the biggest standing ovations at Cannes when it premiered.
It still holds the number one spot, if I'm not mistaken.
Sí. How much?
Yeah.
Wait,
I think I'm Googling it. Hold up.
Like 14 or 12. Or 16, yeah. Or 18. No más de 18.
Diablo.
O quizá 22.
20, 22 minutes is on one episode of an anime.
Yeah, 22. 22. Oh my god, la pegué.
Jesus Christ.
Shrek premiered at Cannes, and it competed for the Palme d'Or. It should have gotten the 22-minute outstanding ovation. And you can quote me on that. I think that one, too, should have been nominated.
And fun... It premiered on my birthday in 2006. So, you know, this movie and I are just connected.
The Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It premiered on May 27, 2006. My birthday.
Okay. I could go into detail as to my feelings, but yeah, overall, Not the biggest fan, unfortunately. Womp womp.
That's sad. I'm sad. But I get it. It's not for everyone. It was nominated alongside After the Wedding, which is one of my favorite Danish films. So I was thriving. Didn't know what was going on back then. But now I'm like, that's a good year. So my number two is Blade Runner 2049. So Blade Runner 2049, directed by Denis Villeneuve. It's the sequel to Blade Runner, directed by Ridley Scott. And it follows LAPD Officer K, who unearths a long-buried secret that has the potential to plunge what's left of society into chaos. So we actually have an episode breaking down Blade Runner 2049, if you're interested. So go forth, posters. Massacre this film.
Okay. I'm not going to massacre it, but Dave Bautista really said, I'm going to make this the highlight of my career.
Neither on.
I absolutely agree, but you know what, Anna? You brought up an interesting point. Dave Bautista, famous WWE wrestler, did really make this the highlight of his career, and he's still with the Guardians of the Galaxy. So imagine how great this film is that he's getting a Marvel check, and this was where he really turned it out.
Man was in it for 10 minutes and killed it.
Exacto. I like this film. A mí me gustó. Ryan Gosling was great. Que no me recuerdo tanto de esta película, to be honest. The highlight of this movie was Dave Bautista and the ending.
I cry every single time.
The ending was depressing.
Every single time. I'm on a roll here with depressive endings.
Exacto. We love that. But also Roger Deakins, okay?
Roger Deakins. Winning his first Oscar for this movie was so deserved. I will die.
The best part of the film is the score.
Yes. The score slaps. It lives rent-free in my mind 24/7.
This film, I think, was delivering what I thought Pan's Labyrinth was going to deliver. Not going to lie. Like, seeing them and then seeing how Gabriela loves this film, and I'm like, okay, this one I get why she loves it. It's visually arresting. It's stunning. It's beautiful. It's iconic. And that's just Ana de Armas and the cinematography. The biggest crime, though, we didn't get to see this in IMAX because, unfortunately, a little hurricane named Maria decided to visit the island at that time. You know, trauma. Collective trauma. Although when that movie was in theaters, I remember I didn't go see it because me and my best friend were like recouping from the trauma and we were like, let's go see Happy Death Day. We need a laugh. And then we also sat through Flatliners. Shout out to Korat. We had a great time. But Blade Runner 2049. It's amazing. He understands the assignment. Definitely.
Yeah. Again, if you do want to hear our thoughts on this film, please check out our Blade Runner 2049 breakdown episode where we analyze the film and Gabriela gets in her feels.
Oh, yeah.
We also need more films like Blade Runner 2049, not gonna lie. We need studios to take more risks, bring back sci-fi in a greater way like we're used to. You know, we grew up idolizing certain sci-fi films and we knew that there's like more out there. And then you see a film like this and you're like, that's exactly what we thought would be out there, like this huge sci-fi adventure. Denis Villeneuve just gets sci-fi. He gets what he needs to put on screen.
Your number one film.
So my number one film is Inception, directed by Christopher Nolan.
Okay. It's a good film.
Yeah. This movie fucking slaps. Yeah.
It's a freaking masterpiece. Come on.
It's Paprika.
It's Nolan's best film.
Nolan said, I'm going to take notes.
That's a mystery tool for later.
Uh-huh. Mira, every time I go to work, yo siempre pongo Time, the Hans Zimmer.
Time? That is my go-to crying song.
You go, okay, I just go with the role, man.
Y'all good.
No.
Like, literally, Hans Zimmer really just knows how to make me cry with his scores.
He really didn't have to pop up on this one.
He really just said, I'm gonna create a song that is so heartbreaking but so epic.
Inception es como que it's one of those films que people are always gonna remember, people are always gonna talk about. It's never gonna be forgotten. Y especially como que con, with that ending, it just leaves como que en midair, como que, are they there? Is it or isn't? For those that cannot be.
It's iconic. It's amazing. It has a really great ending. Visually, it's amazing. Seeing it in a theater as a child, it leaves a mark on you. At least it did for me. Kind of wish they'd put that in an IMAX theater here in Puerto Rico one day. Maybe.
Okay, posers, it's time for some ranking. Starting with Juan. What is your ranking for Gabriela's picks?
Okay. Well, number 4 in terms of the ranking is Pan's Labyrinth. No one surprised. Third nope. place is Worst Person in the World. Second, I went back and forth on this a lot, but I'm actually going to go with Inception. I think the visuals are great. I think it's a really great movie. I got to see it in theaters. It was a great experience. But I have more of a connection with Blade Runner 2049 than I do with Inception. So Blade Runner 2049 for me is number 1. Seen it twice. It's a banger. Denis Villeneuve, you got it. You understood the assignment. It's amazing. Iconic. Stunning. Cinematography. Chef's kiss. Score. Fantastic. The real crime is that this got released after Maria. And we couldn't see this in IMAX in a theater where we belong. So that's the real crime. IMAX, if you want to release this, re-release this one day, I'm just saying, I'll go.
Every day I wish for that to happen because I can't believe I was deprived of this film experience.
Yeah. So that's my ranking.
So 4th place is, not surprised, Worst Person in the World. I'm so sorry. Ya tengo mi notes up apology aquí. Está listo para postear. 3rd place, Pan's Labyrinth. But it's because I feel I need a rewatch. So I don't remember pretty much. 2nd place is Blade Runner. Because the aesthetic. I loved it. And 1st place, no surprise, Inception.
Yes.
Okay, my ranking. In 4th place, Pan's Labyrinth. In 3rd place, Blade Runner 2049. 2nd place, Inception. And 1st place, The Worst Person in the World. Because obviously we share it, so it has to be up there.
Not surprised by your ranking at all.
No. Okay, and rounding up our individual rankings to make the ultimate ranking of these films. So, according to the poser's consensus, math has been done.
The math has mathed.
The ultimate ranking for this film's place: Pan's Labyrinth at number 4. The Worst Person in the World at number 3. Blade Runner 2049 at number 2. And Inception at number 1, making Inception the ultimate film from Gabriela's picks. Congratulations, Christopher Nolan.
You won something.
The world will forget you made ¿Cuál fue esa película?
Tenet. I still haven't seen it, so
I like Tenet, but I wanted to make the joke. Okay, next up is Juan. Prepare to defend yourself. You're number 4.
Fun fact, I am the one who caused chaos with his Letterboxd rankings. Because originally my number 4 was Girls Trip. Even though, originally, it was going to be The Parent Trap 1998. However, I saw an agenda in mind. I saw it could have been completed. And I went for it. Because one poser had not seen this film. And quite honestly, I wanted all 4 of us to see it. So, number 4 is now Scream 2022. Why? It is my favorite film of 2022 so far. One person has not seen this, so I had to fix that. And honestly, I felt we were all putting films we loved from this year at number 4, because Josie had Worst Person in the World, Gabriela had Worst Person in the World. I thought it made sense.
It makes sense. It was fair.
Yeah. So yeah, 4, Scream 2022, requel of the first Scream of the Scream series, brings back all your favorite characters 25 years later after a streak of brutal murders shocked the quiet town of Woodsboro. A new killer has donned the Ghostface masks and begins targeting a group of teenagers to resurrect secrets from the town's deadly past.
No thoughts. Head empty. It was good. I really like Jen Ortega.
Queen.
The ending was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I loved this film. I remember mentioning multiple times that if a certain thing happened in this film, I would proceed to cry my eyes out. And I did. I really had a fun time with this film. I really liked how meta it was. And I'm usually picky when it comes to films who, and like any form of media who is very meta, but I think this handled it very well. And yeah, I thought it was a really good, you know, kind of like reboot slash whatever they wanted to do worked.
Gabriela, it's a requel. It's a reboot sequel.
Yeah, that. It worked. I thought it combined a lot of things from the original and also added some new aspects to it that worked very well. My only, I talked about this with you, Juan, that there was one plot point that to me made no sense whatsoever.
And I'm ready to defend that like it's a court case and my name's Elle Woods.
You were defending it with your whole chest.
Your Honor, my name is Elle Woods and I'm ready to defend.
But other than that, yeah, it's a really good film.
This movie was the definition of meta, and I loved it in every way. Jenna Ortega is a queen. She's slowly becoming the new screen queen, and I love that for her. This one scene, I didn't cry, pero I was like, no.
Why? I didn't cry. I didn't cry. I hysterically sobbed.
I was like, why does it have to be that character? You know? Y después como que every time I watch a new like a Scream movie, como que I try to guess who the killer is. And once again, I did not guess who the killer was this time.
Anna, it was so obvious.
I know, but I was so mad.
That's my only quarrel with the Scream movies. Like, the killer reveals are always so predictable.
Pero es que it was so meta, and it was just right in your face. I just didn't bother. Like, that can't be it. It just can't.
I've seen this film 6 times. I'll defend every problem you think it has. Trust me, I have convinced someone to up their rating after a conversation with me, and I'll do it again. We got another film coming up, which we kind of predicted in an episode. Real quick, before we move on to my next one. In one of the episodes, we talked about Scream possibly going to a new city, that being New York, if it was possible to do a more popular city like that. And I remember Josie and Gabriela being like, yeah, and it's possible. Meta. So we kind of manifested that. So where's our writing credits?
Mira, the otro día, yo estaba caminando. There is a hallway I walk through during my transfers when I come and go from work. And I was thinking, if they don't film in this fucking hallway.
Literal.
Fucking wasted. Wasted opportunity. Because it's a long-ass hallway with nowhere to go.
It's a good 5 minutes.
Terrifying.
Walk. It is.
Like, it gives you the vibes that you're in the middle of a zombie apocalypse. So I was, like, walking through there, and I just felt, like, this horrible chill, and I looked behind me, and there was no one there. But I was like, oh my god, can you imagine this in a Scream movie? Oh.
Canada, you're so lucky. How does it feel to be filming? Love that the consensus is we like Scream 22. Thank you very much.
It's a good film. It traumatized me.
I know.
Many people don't appreciate. I'm mad because some people just don't appreciate it.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you. I agree completely, wholeheartedly. My number 3 was a film I saw 5 times in 2020, thanks to Showtime being free for a month, and that is Charlie's Angels: Full Throttle. Yes, you guessed it. The Angels are charged with finding a pair of missing rings that are encoded with the personal information of members of the Witness Protection Program. As informants are killed, the ladies target a rogue agent who might be responsible. She's an icon, she's a legend, and she is the moment. Now, come on now. Go ahead. Massacre it. I don't care.
I just love how you rewatching that film like 5 times in a month was also like you trying to beat my record for rewatching Blade Runner 2049 like 5 times in a month.
And I did.
Oh my god. Yeah, I liked this film. Again, I hadn't seen it since I was like 12. Because my dad really likes this film, so I watched it for the first time with him when I was little. And so revisited it again. It's camp.
Yeah.
It's camp. Yeah. I had a fun time watching it. You know, you could argue that it's a bad film in some ways, but it's a lot of fun that I don't mind anything.
I mean, this belongs in the Criterion Collection. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you know, they just don't make films like this anymore.
Exactly.
Damn, this movie really was the definition of camp. Okay, mira, honestly, this is my first time watching a Charlie's Angel film or some sort. I don't get it. Maybe this movie is just not for me or this type of film. Like, I paused it a couple of times. There were some jokes. Okay. I chuckled. I get it. I get the campiness of this. But I'm okay. It just didn't work for me. I'm so sorry, Juan.
It's okay. I'll take that as a trait of what I'm going to say about one of your films. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that Vianna. You're not alone. I wasn't vibing with it until I realized that everything was on purpose, and that did help. Pero yo estaba al principio como que qué caramba esto. I did not remember any of this. What the heck? And I'm still not fully on board with it, just because it came to the point where I was like laughing, and I didn't know if it was with the movie. But I had fun, and that's what counts. Pero it was not for me.
That's fine. I mean, it's literally have fun, enjoy them, defy gravity, you know, destroy them.
Helicóptero.
That was Cam. That
cinema.
Was cinema.
Cinema.
Of camp.
I need that in IMAX. You know, this movie walked so Black Widow can run.
No, this walked so Top Gun.
Literally,
I'll take that.
If you go and get a dictionary, Iwoka Cam is Charlie's Angel Full Throttle, okay? This is it.
I'll take that as your review, Anna. That's okay. You're forgiven. I'll take that as your review.
Okay.
What's your next film?
My next film, I have an emotional attachment to. I discovered this in high school. Very much kicked into my obsession for the 80s and 80s films. So it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. During the beginning of the pandemic, I got to see this in a drive-thru movie. It was everything. Favorite time watching this film. And if you don't know what this is about, first off, how? Second of all, fix that. Third of all, after a high school slacker named Ferris Bueller successfully fakes an illness in order to skip school for the day, he goes on a series of adventures throughout Chicago with his girlfriend Sloan and best friend Cameron, trying to outwit his wily school principal and fed-up sister. This is the one time I think film bros are on my side. Because it's very hard not to. It's fun. I like to have fun.
This is a very Juan movie.
Literally.
Literal. Y mira, como que when I watch this film, lo más que yo me recuerdo de esta película is the parade scene. Like, that's the first thing that goes to my mind.
Yes.
And it was really fun. Como que it was I remember que I was having fun watching it, pero that scene specifically, it was cheerful. Everybody was having fun. You go, okay, well, I like it.
Yeah, I had never seen this film before. I don't know. Maybe it was just hearing so many people talk about it throughout the years that I kind of had too high of expectations. So when it ended, I was like, okay, fun. To me, it wasn't like anything life-changing or anything like that, but I did understand why Juan really loves it.
Honestly, the movie when the whole movie takes a whole day.
It takes a whole day.
How you have so much time?
Are these people flying? Are they not taking, you know, like traffic?
They had places to go, people to see, errands to run.
I like this movie. I did not get the chance to rewatch it for this episode, but I do like it. Juan has rights.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate this. So
you're number one.
Yeah. For a long time, I was saying Ferris Bueller was my favorite film of all time. And the pandemic happened and I realized I had to give Ferris Bueller a second spot. Because my number one is truly the film I have logged on Letterboxd 7 times and seen many, 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 many more times, Scream from 1996. Are we surprised? No.
No.
No. She's an icon. She's a moment.
Exactly. And if you don't know what this film is about, number one, do you follow me on Twitter? Number two, how? Also, a killer known as Ghostface begins killing off teenagers, and as the body count begins to rise, one girl and her friends find themselves contemplating the rules of horror films as they find themselves living in a real-life one. This is the best slasher film of all time for me. I will not accept any other argument. It's hilarious. It's iconic. It's exactly how a slasher film should be, entertaining-wise. And if you say Texas Chainsaw is your favorite, you know what? We're just going to have to agree to disagree. I'm sorry, baby, but this is just how the rules are made.
Because there's nothing bad to talk about this movie. It's so iconic. It has shape in the horror scene. It's a película. Drew Barrymore's iconic scene. What else? What else we can say about this movie?
I remember when I watched this film for the first time for a Scream episode. Mm-hmm. I was hesitant. I was like, this movie can't be that good. Well, dear listener, it is that good. Mm-hmm. I was surprised about how much I love the franchise as a whole, not just the first movie. Even though it is my favorite one, it's a great time. Like, I'm now a Scream fan, thanks to Juan.
My impact. Top Gun music in the background.
Literally.
How dare they introduce us to some character just so they can kill them off? How dare they?
You mean me with Stranger Things right now?
Period.
Yeah. Anyways, I like Scream 1996 too, obviously, because it was released in the same year I was born. So obviously it is great. Also, I just like the premise. It's a really good premise. It was kind of different with the requel. But, I mean, it's the original, so gotta praise it.
You can also see the impact this has on a lot of horror films going forward. Wes Craven, rest in peace, King. Definitely. You did that. You delivered us.
Films. A film that's coming out soon. I kept thinking about you with Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Ay, Cuerpos, Cuerpos, Cuerpos. I need to see that film.
Cuerpos times three.
Cuerpos times three. Puerto Rico, come through for me. It's in August.
It's during Leo season. It's Juan vibes.
When I give that a 5-star, then what?
Because just think Scream.
Meets Clue.
If it were Mean Girls.
Did I write this film? Did I secretly write this film? Yeah, too. I didn't know I wrote this film. It's like me when I found out I wrote Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Life changing.
Okay, posers. It's time to rank.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, so Juan. It was kind of tough. Was not expecting that to be as tough. But my official ranking of Juan's filmography. In 4th place. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. 3rd place, Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. In 2nd place, Scream 2022. And in 1st place, Scream 1996.
So in 4th place, we got Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. In 3rd place, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. In 2nd place, Scream 2022. And in 1st place, the original Scream.
Is this a pattern?
We're at Capri, baby. The patterns, they're here.
And my ranking, listeners, is in 4th place, Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle. In 3rd place, Scream 2022. In 2nd place, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And in 1st place, Scream 1996.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we have a clear number one.
I love how Josie was technically the closest, I think, to my rankings of how it is. I'm sorry I put you all through Girls Trip at first. I know it was a
trip. I have a lot of things to say with Girl Trip. How dare you take that off?
Juan, we sat through it.
because I knew you would make it number four.
Okay, I'll made it number four. However, I had some thoughts.
Did you have your Libre Tita?
Yeah, mi Libre Tita.
Posers. We have the official ranking. So the math has math, and considering all our different rankings, in fourth place is Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. Womp womp. Sorry.
It's fine.
For second and third, we have a tie for Ferris and Scream 2022, and first place is Scream 1996.
I'll take it.
Yay.
Ooh, snaps. And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. And we're back. Thank you for listening to our sponsor. And now we are going to be diving into Anna's Letterboxd top four. Take us away with your number four.
Ay, Dios santo. Espérate. So in my Letterboxd list, it's not from order de que, like, my first pick to my fourth pick. It's just, okay, I all love them, okay? I love them all as a child.
I know, we need a ranking. We need an official ranking. No!
So I didn't put it in particular order, okay? But I'm going to start with Punch Drunk Love. I don't know, it had, like, a special place in my heart, you know? It is directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, starring Adam Sandler, and it's, like, one of those, like, the first time I see Adam Sandler, like, in a role that is different from him. I was captivated by it, and then it's a love story, and I thought it was cute, it was quirky. Y pues como que, the day that I watched it, I was in my feels, y pues como que... You know what? I like this. I like this movie. So for those that they don't know what it's about, it's a socially awkward and volatile small business owner meets the love of his life after being threatened by a gang of scammers. I'm just a little bit scared. ¿Qué masacre en esta película? Pero dale, ya, lo tiré.
Yo te tengo cariño. ¿Qué? Así que yo no la voy a masacrar.
Okay.
Pero no me gusta esa película.
Ouch.
No me gustó. Nos encontramos en un callejón y nos ponemos a pelear a puño. I don't like Paul Thomas Anderson. Pero vi esta película por ti y yo creo que eso dice mucho. This is a lot about my love that I watched this movie for you.
Corazón,
I'll leave it at that.
Corazón de emoji. Te mando corazón de emoji. But can you at least say it is the most different, like from his filmography? It's the most different from his films.
It has its appeal. Mm-hmm. It has its charm. I did not like him as a character. I thought Adam Sandler did a good job. Me encantó ver a Luis Guzmán porque hello, boricua.
Wow.
Pero I did not believe the relationship. I didn't like him. I didn't like them. I just think Paul Thomas Anderson has a very weird concept of what love is. And I hope Maya Rudolph makes sure that he goes to therapy. Because he also has a weird mommy kink.
Right?
Yeah. No, he does.
He does.
Y mira que I vibed with Phantom Thread, which I hate to admit.
I'm so surprised by that.
But yeah, my biggest issue with Punch Drunk Love is the main character.
It's okay.
Abracito.
See, I'm going to go in the corner now.
No.
All right, Anna. I'm going to read you my notes.
Okay.
I wrote my notes as I watched this film. Long time ago. Note number one. Why does Adam Sandler do stressful films? Number two, is this secretly a prequel to Uncut Gems? Three, coño, this is stressful, what the fuck? Number four, does Anna like films that stress her out? Then I realized, I did some research, that Sandler is playing someone with social phobia and anxiety disorder, and the film highlights his lonely existence, marked by occasional fits of rage, and it reveals a family where emotional abuse is the norm, which was something I wasn't expecting. I really, really like Adam Sandler in this role. He does have range. If you think he doesn't, go watch this film and tell me otherwise. I think the way he was able to lose his grasp of control was impressive. Can I watch this again? No. I don't think I can sit through this again. Not because it's a bad film, just because for me, it's very emotional. And I do think at times I was able to sympathize with the character feeling like he didn't know his place in the world. I got that. But I don't know how I'd do with a rewatch of this, not with a lower rating, but, you know, being able to sit through all the stressful moments, even though I know what's coming. You know, it's anxiety, it's sadness, it's anger, it's loneliness, it's longing, it's rage. I think that it's one of those Paul Thomas Anderson films that I actually could say I liked. I don't know if I'd revisit it, but I liked it. I'd give it like a 3.5/4. Maybe 3.5, depends on the ranking of the other films. But I thought it was good.
I'll take this.
Take your W.
Yeah, I feel like when it comes to this film specifically, it's one of those films that it needs to be rewatched because there's a lot of details that you probably would have missed in the first one.
I remember watching this movie with you very vividly. Because mm-hmm. We had watched Eraserhead and I didn't like it. And then you made me watch the Before trilogy, which is incredible. No complaints there. And then you were like, okay, now you have to watch Punch Drunk Love. And before you press play, you were like, so I really like this movie. And you gave me a little speech about how much you love this movie. I was like, okay, let's go. I liked it. I'm not, like, I'm a casual PTA fan. I insist that he peaked with There Will Be Blood and he will never make a film as good as that. Like, I don't think it's, like, the best film ever, but it was cute. I don't know. I vibed with it. I really liked the cinematography in this film. Like, especially in the little scenes where every time he's talking about... I forgot her name, about the love interest. The mm-hmm. scenes kind of like light up or like yeah. phone booths would light up. I really like those mm-hmm. little details. And yeah, he was really good in this film. I understand why Anna likes Adam Sandler so much. But at the same time, I know she likes The Sandman a lot because she has not sat through most of his terrible filmography. So she's just blissfully unaware of all the shit he has made throughout the years. She's only seen the good stuff.
And let her be. Let her enjoy this.
Don't let me have this moment.
She doesn't have to sit through Jack and Jill. Let her enjoy this.
Okay, so next film. A film that y'all gonna massacre. And I don't care. Because ever since we started the podcast, I always talk about this film. And some of y'all, I already know what y'all gonna think about, and it's Hereditary.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Okay.
Listen. Anna, I watched this for you. And I also have a very vivid memory of this film. Because I remember you texted me while you were watching this film in the theater. You texted me that you were watching a horror film. And you were scared shitless. And I was like, what the fuck are you watching? Because if you know Anna, she doesn't get scared easily. So for her to get scared, that means that shit is traumatizing. And Anna said, I'm watching Hereditary. And then I did some research on it. And so it premiered at Sundance. I don't remember if it was in the US or in the UK that... There was a that, you know, families were going to the movies to watch a children's film. I don't remember which film it was. And they accidentally played the trailer for Hereditary before the film. It's a good film. Like, the story is just so interesting. And just the build up to it. I honestly wasn't that scared. I think I was mostly shaking towards the end, but it was just because I was kind of dreading. Mm-hmm. What it was getting to, because I knew that it I knew like the twist already because I think you had mentioned it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was familiar with the twist. I just hadn't seen the whole thing, you know, through. So just the like the build up to that ending, I really liked it.
I just went up to the theater not knowing about it. And everybody was just joking around, laughing, and, like, talking throughout the movie. And when that scene happens, everybody, like shut the fuck up. And you could feel the air, like, dread, you know? And it was different, and I felt uncomfortable watching it. And I think that's why I was scared, and the whole thing about, you know, paganism and stuff like that. You know, for some people it could be like a touchy subject, and iba como que those kind of things como que scare me a little bit. So I think that was why. And then that climax until the ending, it como que I was like, shit, this is scary for me.
Hang on, I'm getting the notes of apology because from Twitter's gonna hate me after this.
Okay.
Pros. Toni Collette, she was really good. I thought she was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now cons. One of my reviews once said, I think I wanted my head chopped off while I watched this so I didn't have to finish it.
Fuck.
Accurate. Honestly, this film was so hype that it just... No. It didn't work for me. It felt a little overhyped for me. I do not like being that anxious watching a horror film. I just couldn't bear to sit through it. I wanted it to be over. It felt kind of inconsistent at times. You know, you went from family dynamic and then it went through supernatural aspect. And, you know, Ari Aster, I'm sorry. We're just never going to get along. Midsommar, I can appreciate you got Florence Pugh to give an amazing performance. I didn't like that film either. I gave it a 3.5 because, you know what? It was a well-made film. It traumatized the fuck out of me. But I can acknowledge it was a good film. Here, no, it did not work for me. I can't really appreciate a lot of things. I didn't really enjoy it as a horror film. I know this is one of like the films that got A24 on the map. It's just not for me. Honestly, it didn't work for me. I'm sorry, Anna. I'm gonna stick by my 1.5 for this. I just didn't like it.
It's okay.
I really don't like it. I know it could have been good, but honestly, it just got a little. He went a little too far for me. That's really the tea. Although I will say, when she got in that one scene with the car and the little girl after the allergy, honestly, the memes were funnier than the scene. Oh, baby, that missed me.
So I called this film a comedy. It is the fall and decay of a Caucasian family. It is slow burn horror. It is introspective, self-reflexive horror piece, a downward spiral of a wounded woman. The sets often look indiscernible from the dioramas / replica, so I like that. Yeah, it's a comedy. And what was her mother? A witch, bro.
And what was also, her sister? The Wicked Witch of the East, bro.
Also, why did I know he was gonna jump out the window? Me di una pavera. Es que ahí fue cuando yo estaba como que, this is a comedy. Because es que he was upstairs in the attic, his mom banging her head against the door. Just people naked in the corner. Y yo dije, eso yo, hell nah, I'm jumping out the window. And then he did. Y yo, oh my God.
You're not the only one.
Yo vi la gente para la esquina y yo, diablo, yo brinco por la ventana, jurao. And then he did it. Yo le di pausa.
This is a comedy.
Y después la madre fucking floating headless. They call her the headless horseman, bitches. She was just floating up into the house. Yeah, this is hilarious. Yo me estaba riendo, honestly. But at the end of the day, I actually found this film to be underwhelming. So it's not that I didn't like it. I was just left like, huh. Okay.
Huh. That's the film that everybody talks about.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you finally got to watch the movie, though.
Yay.
For Fing. It's been years. So next film, Deke, I know y'all gonna love, clearly. Parasite.
I think I can speak for all the posers when I say that Parasite is a masterpiece. No notes.
No. Yeah, I don't think we have to go into specifics for this one, other than the fact that we all love it.
I own the Criterion Blu-ray. That's enough for me.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Bon Hive Rise.
It was what brought the posers together. We were so active that award season.
Yeah.
We fucking predicted it. Let's talk about it. We, like, better reactions than the Oscar expert. We predicted it.
We actually did.
Exactly.
And then we predicted Coda.
Yeah.
But honestly, nothing like the first time you watch this film.
No, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not.
I haven't seen it again.
Okay?
I haven't seen it again. I just live with the memory.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen it.
It's such a precious memory.
The next film is Perfect Blue, directed by Satoshi Kon. And honestly, one of the reasons I really love this movie, it was because in my anime journey, okay, in my journey as a weeb, so... This was, like, one of those first, like, anime films it was really impactful for me. It tackled very mature themes, and that's something I didn't saw when I was first seeing, like, anime como tal, especially on films. I always saw shows. But this movie was my introduction to Satoshi Kon and his filmography. I loved him as a director, and everything he has made, it's amazing. And this movie, basically, Perfect Blue walks so the Black Sun could run. It is a really interesting movie to see, and it's one of the films that, again, it feels like it needs more than one watch to understand.
I can't sit through this film again. I was going to send you a therapy bill. I watched this at night. Why didn't you tell me not to watch this at night? I couldn't sleep.
I'm so sorry. Could it be considered a horror movie?
Yes.
Because this clearly was.
This is a really fucked up movie. Yeah, this could have been a horror film. Mm-hmm. Like, the way this movie plays with the line of what's real and what's imaginary is psychologically impressive, if not very creepy. It's really graphic and disturbing and feels hauntingly real. You know, mm-hmm. It's actually sad how relevant this film still is in today's society, given many situations that unfortunately have happened in Hollywood. I like what it had to say about harmful celebrity idolizing, taking being a fan or standing too far. The way that violence against women is glamorized in the media and how the internet can create really harmful and toxic behaviors. Even this from this 1997 film, and it's 2022, and this still feels real. The only thing is technology has gotten more advanced. Like, even Scream talked about that, the 2022 version, about toxic fandom, which I find impressive when you compare them side to side. But also, ironically, this film's called Perfect Blue, and there wasn't a lot of blue in the color palette for me. It was kind of interesting. It was a little too much for me in terms of it sometimes feeling unpleasant and disorienting. Again, I do not recommend you watch this film at night. You want to sleep. I didn't feel well after watching it, which means it works in terms of showing how scary the subject of the movie is. But I really don't like feeling that way. It hit a little too deep. As a story, it's very well done. It's a very well-made movie, and definitely, I feel, one of the best-made anime films I've seen, up there with Akira for me. And I can see how this influences a lot of psychological thrillers out there today, like Black Swan, etc. The only reason my rating gets affected a bit is, again, it was too much for me at times. Very impressive, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
El ataque. No me gusta el ataque. But I will definitely, I don't want to rewatch this. It's not that I don't want it, I just don't think I can. But if you had to ask me, you know, pick between rewatching Punch Drunk Love, Perfect Blue, or Hereditary, I think I'm going to pick Perfect Blue, as long as it's during the daytime and I can have a comfort watch afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, and it had a lot to pack for an 81-minute movie. It was very impressive.
If you watch it today, it's still relevant. Especially with the whole...
It's super relevant.
Yeah, especially the whole idolization.
Yeah, especialmente ahora que we're more conscious of, because K-pop and J-pop has become super mainstream.
Sí.
So at least seeing it, this, I saw it for the first time this year. actually last night at like 10:40 p.m.
So twinsies.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those moments where I was like thinking that I'm happy I watched it at this moment because of how relevant it is today.
Absolutely.
We should do a breakdown episode, but that's just me.
I gotta rewatch this one.
No. Has everyone already shared their thoughts?
No, I haven't shared.
Okay.
I really like the commentary, like as everyone was discussing now. That's pretty much it. I'm sorry, Anna.
With Perfect Blue, even the own director, there was an interview that they talked to him about Black Swan, and he knows there's literally scenes that are like copy
and paste. He denies it. He continues to deny it.
He denies it, but it's literally copy and paste.
Yeah, I personally would have to rewatch Black Swan because I couldn't see the resemblances other than maybe the bathtub scene in a way, just because it was in a bathtub and the ending with the glass. But I mean, they're very different movies. I will say que yo te envié el texto que like the scene with the fishes reminded me of Moon Knight, and I'm like, did Moon Knight copy the fish thing? Because Moon Knight also deals with dissociative identity disorder, so that was very I saw that and I was like, but just my quick thoughts on the film, Anna. It's okay, I fucking loved it. If I could put it in my top four, I would. I love this movie to pieces. Yo estaba pegada a la computadora. Llegaron las 12:40 and I just started Googling theories y todo. I went down the rabbit hole for an hour. I love this movie. I liked Mima. I liked her story. I called it from the beginning. I just fucking called it. Cuando pasó el plot twist, yo, la sabía. And it was just interesting to see. I like that they were able to add her reflection as she was chasing her and everything, because I like seeing that the actual aspects of reality just to ground us a little bit, because if not, I think would have been lost without that. But either way, paranoia and down like in a spiral y todo eso. I loved it. So you're actually the poser that got the highest rating out of all of this.
I knew it.
Yeah. Tiene Parasite y Perfect Blue. That's enough. Also, I just love how they all start with P's. But then a Hereditary. Ahí como que womp womp.
Verdad.
Posers, your rankings.
My ranking is Perfect Blue, Punch Drunk Love, Hereditary, and Parasite, obviously.
Number four, Hereditary. No getting past it for me. Number three, I think will surprise you. I was going back and forth with making this one three or two, but I've ultimately decided number three is Punch Drunk Love. Number two is Perfect Blue. And number one is Parasite.
Okay, so my number four is Punch Drunk Love. My number three is Hereditary. My second one is Perfect Blue because of the sexual assault scenes.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a lot to sit
Yeah,
through.
I almost gave it a five except for that. And Parasite is my number one because how can I not?
Exactly. Number one's clear.
Okay, and we have the official ranking, the math has math. In fourth place, we have Punch Drunk Love. In third place, we have Hereditary. In second place, we have Perfect Blue. And in first place, we have Parasite. So literally the same ranking I did.
Yay!
Oh my god, the moment we... I forgot. I'm like, ¿qué pasa ahora? Right, it's my turn. Time for you guys to judge my films.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. I forgot this was gonna happen. The tables have turned, the turns have tables. Ahora yo me puse nerviosa. En verdad se me olvidó que faltaba yo. ¡Yo terminamos!
Are you ready?
Hello, everybody. I forgot I had to do this too. So, number four, pretty quick because we just talked about it, is The Worst Person in the World. I've explained why. My third film on my Letterboxd top four is Beasts of the Southern Wild. And basically, it follows Hush Puppy, an intrepid six-year-old girl who lives with her father, Wink, in the bathtub, a southern delta community at the edge of the world. Wink's tough love prepares her for the unraveling of the universe, for a time when he's no longer there to protect her. When Wink contracts a mysterious illness, nature flies out of whack. Temperatures rise and the ice caps melt, unleashing an army of prehistoric creatures called Auroks. Probably butchered that, I'm so sorry. With the waters rising, the Auroks coming, and the Wink's health fading, Hush Puppy goes in search of her lost mother. Lay it on me.
Okay. So, I saw this movie like a while ago, so I don't remember as much. But I do remember that a mí me gustó the opening of this film. I liked the score. The cinematography was really good. The little girl, she really acted out. Como que she gave it her all. Y pues, I thought it was a pretty interesting commentary on climate change. Como que ese, the movie also como que has este magical realism to it. And I thought it was pretty interesting how they used it. Y como que, I personally don't have any bad things to say about this movie. Okay, I quite liked it. Yeah.
Hey, girl. So I actually saw this for the first time for our Magical Realism episode with Zoraida Cordova. If you have not heard that episode, you should definitely check it out. So this film is, of course, not my kind of film. I think it's a good film. I can see how people connect with this. I like the coming-of-age narrative, the magical realism, and the visual aesthetics were refreshing. I liked the score and the cinematography. They were really well done. Main actress, it was like 8 years old, I think. Hush Puppy?
Yeah.
Hush Puppy, yes. I thought she really, really did a great job acting. I was very impressed with how she was able to command the scene, the emotions. Very impressive. I agree with Anna. I like commentary on climate change. In the end, I personally couldn't connect with it, but I do see how other people like it.
I love this film. It's a masterpiece. That's all. It's a great film, and I wish it had more love and attention because it deserves it.
That's what I'm here for. That's why it's not leaving my top four.
Good. Doing God's work.
Also, un comentario que se me olvidó decir. Capunte, the worst person in the world has rights. Es que ustedes no tienen el criterion y se nota.
Ma'am.
I'll show you guys pictures. It's lovely.
It's a good DVD.
I mean,
no lo llama DVD, que people are gonna come for you.
Let them come for me.
It's physical media.
It's called Criterion. Okay.
Oh my god.
Let's go. This episode is 2 hours long.
People are going to travel with this episode.
My second ranked film is Shiva Baby. And yes, these are in order. Death. Family style. A college student attends a family Shiva where she is accosted by her relatives, outshined by her ex-girlfriend, and comes face to face with her sugar daddy and his family. Oye, que me pronto. Do you recommend this film? And I'm like, do I? Thoughts?
Honestly, I'm glad that you recommend this to me.
Same.
Because this movie was on my top last year.
Yeah.
Yes. Me encanta esta película. It was a wild ride. I was stressed out and I still love it either way. It was hilarious. Yeah.
Who brings a baby to a Shiva?
Uh-huh.
Honestly, this film, along with the meme I found later, turned me into a Rachel Sennett fan, and I'm so glad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I honestly want, at least for now, like, I had the chance to meet her. She seemed nice. Like, her and Emma were both nice. They're writing another movie together. The main character supposedly named Josie. There are rights.
I want to see that film.
Oh,
yo también. Porque yo como que, oh, what's your name? Porque me estaban firmando el DVD. Y yo, oh, Josie. And they're like, oh my God. Our next character is named Josie. Yo, huzzah.
Oh, Josie, fun fact. I own the Blu-ray. This is how much I love the film.
Yes.
It is so good.
Yes.
Yo siempre voy a tener la duda de que how many bagels were in the set.
Oh my gosh.
That's such a good question. They used a lot of bagels.
There was smeared. A lot of bagels. I need to know.
The bagel shop in that community was really thriving that when they were filming it.
Yeah.
Sí, sí. Anyway, like, Josie really campaigned this movie on film Twitter.
Yeah, I'm so upset it didn't get any Oscar recognition.
Right?
At least it got DGA awards.
Oh, absolutely. As it deserved. Mm-hmm. It just deserved more. I absolutely think it deserves more. Rachel, but honestly, Emma, everyone.
Imagínate, it was, like, competing for, like, Best New Director or algo con Lin-Manuel Miranda. So, I mean, hopefully, like, a lot of people did recognize Emma Seligman with this film. Unfortunately, the Academy just no tiene oído, no tiene ojo. Ojo que no ven, corazón que no siente, I guess.
The Academy. Did y'all hear that?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a pijo.
But yes, I'm sure great things. Like, this is just the start for Emma Seligman, and it's going to be great. And anyways, go watch Shiva Baby if you haven't. Y pa nada. Like, no, like, I swear I'm not going to hear any ill words about this film. Let's talk about it. My number one, my favorite movie. You asked me what my favorite movie is, and I will look at you straight in the eye, like, dead set. And I'll be like, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Have you heard of it? By Celine Sciamma. So, if you haven't heard about it, where have you been? Where have you been, loca?
Have you even listened to our podcast?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Are you new here?
Exactly. Is this the first episode of the film posters you're listening to?
If so, welcome.
Let's get to some edumacation. On an isolated island in Brittany at the end of the 18th century, a female painter is obliged to paint a wedding portrait of a young woman. Se me infla el pecho. Se me infla el pecho. Se me llena de emoción. This is a great film. Do we need to say it? Like, we did a breakdown episode. I've gotten into the habit now that whenever, if I'm talking to someone, like, with a romantic interest, I check their letter. First, I check if they have a letterbox. That's very important. And if they do, I immediately search Portrait of a Lady on Fire. If you gave that sucker less than, like, if you give it less than a 4.5, it's not happening. I saw someone give it a 3. Someone I thought we were
friends.
I was like, do you know who I am? How dare you call yourself part of my friend circle? Be banished.
Josie.
What?
I'm glad you're seated, Josie. Because on my letterboxed, I see someone gave it a 2.
Interesante.
Oh my God. I see a 2.
I think it's the same one.
I need to see the 2. It was...
Oh my God. I have 2 2s.
Wait.
I have 2 2s too.
Excuse me.
I love the comments.
Hay gente que ni nada o rating.
To use the only French I know at the top of my head, pourquoi?
Okay, I'm just going to leave it at the fact that if you don't like this movie, I'm just going to look at you, like, lean close on the table, rest my arm and my elbow on the table, looking at you straight in the eye, and I'm going to go, no bitches.
And you would be right.
We're recording this at 11 p.m. The filters are out. Anyways, posers, rank my movies. Anna.
Okay. Fourth place. Worst person in the world. I am so sorry. Third place. Beast of the Southern Wild. And I like the movie, pero... la próxima como que me gustaron más.
It's okay. It's my third too.
Okay.
So it's fine.
Okay. second place, I'm so sorry, but I think it has to be Portrait of the Lady on Fire. And, first place, Mishima Baby.
I mean, it's more your style. I get it, because it does, even though it's like a contemporary kind of romance film with some drama, it has that tension. People like to joke this is a horror movie. So I remember the first time I watched this, and I'm like, excelente, tiene un poquito de todo. It's like The Posers, but with like el doctor, the Powerpuff Girls, como que tirando todo que nos gusta en una película. And then Shiva Baby came out.
Exacto.
A literal baby was born, and it was Shiva Baby.
I feel like for Shiva Baby, I'll be able to rewatch it more. And I enjoy it a lot more. It's, like you said, it's my style.
That's Gabriela. Josie, it was so hard to rank your list.
Haha.
But I'm also very grateful that you removed Titanic, because that would have made it even harder.
¿Verdad? Titanic was on this. Just so it, es que, para contexto, Titanic is one of my favorite all-time movies that was only dethroned in 2019 when I saw Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yes.
But I don't have it on my Letterboxd top four because I like, number one, I have a list called Josie's Criterion Collection, so all my favorite movies are there. I like keeping it current with my Letterboxd top four. So yes. Anyways, proceed. So yes, that's about the Titanic.
So thank God. That would have been impossible. So my ranking, and I feel like, because I gave all of these films 5 stars. I'm just going to rank them in terms of emotional reaction. Beast of the Southern Wild, Worst Person in the World, Shiba Baby, and Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Huzzah. One.
How you doing?
La Vendetta.
Bougie bad bitch. Okay, support Villano and Tiano. So, number four, Beast of the Southern Wild. Number three, Worst Person in the World. Anna, I'm joining you. Second place, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. First place, Shiva Baby. Shiva Baby is my film. Love it. It is fantastic. I'm so glad you introduced me to it. I rewatch Shiva Baby more. Portrait, phenomenal film. Not a single flaw you can find in that film. But I give the edge to Shiva Baby just on how much I enjoyed it and how you still enjoy it.
Bueno, I don't know what to tell y'all. We have 2 ties.
We're in Macy's, damn. The ties are everywhere.
Well, the ultimate ranking, pues, Shiva Baby and Portrait are both tied for first and second. And then, yeah, Beast of the Southern Wild and The Worst Person in the World are tied for 3 and 4. So,
yeah. You're the tiebreaker.
Okay. Just for the sake of it, because the other one was just one, this one is literally all 4. I'm going to put Shiva Baby at number 1 just for the sake of the film poser's agenda. Portrait of a Lady in Fire is my agenda, but for the film poser, since this is the film poser's official ranking, Shiva Baby number 1, Portrait of a Lady in Fire number 2, Worst Person in the World, and Beast of the Southern Wild.
Purr.
We did it!
We made it!
Yay!
And if you made it to the end, thank you for sticking by us. This is probably going to be a very long episode, but not as long as it actually was. I'm definitely going to edit this down. So congratulations, you made it through the edited down version. This was originally like over 3 hours.
If you want the film poser's director's cut, shout out.
The film poser cut. Release the film poser cut.
Yeah, sure. You might hang out there.
If you want to, I mean, people make jokes about podcasts being so long, and we're always trying to bring them down. Why don't we stay true to the meme? Listen to the entire, like, 4 hours. I dare you. But I'm not going to do that to you. So, anyways, thank you for listening. Yeah, we appreciate you. Any final thoughts?
Yes, we have rights.
Yeah, we really do. I think that's what we learned today. We have taste.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it through this episode in one go, let us know and we'll give you a shout out in our next episode. We'd like to thank you for listening, to give a special shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Where can they find you, posers?
You can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at The Josie Marie. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye. Bye.